Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. This week, the Virginia General Assembly has entered its last 2 weeks, we hope, on the calendar for finishing its work and all of its legislation, including the state's two-year budget. The General Assembly still is considering dozens of bills and is far from agreement on the state budget, while it has dealt with some significant and highly charged social legislation. Joining us for this discussion of the Virginia General Assembly's current session are a pair of state senators in the leadership of their respective political parties in the 2020 Virginia Senate, Senator Donald McEachin, a Henrico County Democrat, and Senator Tommy Normant, a Williamsburg, James City County Republican. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Nice to be with you. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure having you both on as our guests. I'm your host, Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. Please give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. If you have a question for Senate Republican Leader Tommy Normant or Senate Democratic Caucus Chair Senator Donald McEachin, we ask that you try to limit your questions to about 30 seconds in length and try to do so in the form of a question. Senator McEachin, let me begin with you. When do you anticipate achieving some agreement on the Senate budget?
Well, I think that's going to depend on a lot of things, not the least of which is our ability to persuade our colleagues that we need to take a different path on a number of issues. You know, we've seen a lot of bills that have been divisive that have come to the floor this year, personhood, and fortunately we were able to send that back, although your listeners should know that that bill's not dead, it's just slumbering for the moment. We've seen the repeal of one gun a month. We've seen today ultrasound pass the Virginia legislature, and certainly those are things that the people of Virginia don't support. We've seen voter suppression bills come this year, and we've seen public money is going to private academies in the form of tax credits. These are things that our caucus does not support, and unfortunately, the budget is going to fund many of those things in one form or another. And so, hopefully, over the course of the next few days and weeks, we'll be able to have a conversation that may resolve our differences.
Senator Normant, same question. When do you anticipate achieving some agreement on the Senate budget? I understand you may be taking it up tomorrow.
It is my expectation we'll take the budget up tomorrow. It's my further expectation that we will take it all the way through tomorrow and that the entire Senate will have an opportunity to decide whether or not we will put the proposed Senate budget on the House budget that has come over before us. As far as an expectation on when we will adopt the budget, I'm not very good at forecasting that. I am not the great Karnak on the famous Johnny Carson show. What I do know is that there is an opportunity to pass a bipartisan budget that addresses the concerns of many Virginians. I have great respect for Don, and he and I enjoy verbally jousting on the floor of the Senate and remain good friends afterwards. And we just have a difference of perspective on the budget. I look at the budget as being a freestanding document that is independent of many of the social issues that the Democratic caucus finds offensive. And I would disagree with Don in some regard that most of those social issues are not funded in any way by the budget. I just would hope that we could continue to work forward to try to find some common ground on the budget and reduce that uncertainty that is certainly going to reverberate all across Virginia. It's going to take some bipartisan discussions, and there are many people on the Democratic side and on the Republican side who are capable of carrying on that dialogue.
Do you think there's a realistic chance that the March 10th adjournment deadline for the General Assembly session will not be met because of the budget deadlock?
My expectation is that with or without a budget that the General Assembly will adjourn on or before March the 10th.
Donald, is that what you see?
I certainly think that's a reasonable assumption. I would just like to say, though, that I guess I differ with my friend Tommy, and I really do need the folks out there to understand that despite how we may sound tonight, Tommy and I are good friends, and I have the deepest respect for him. But the budget is a moral document. It is a document that executes many of the things that we decide upon. That being said, this is the budget that's going to authorize the health department to order an ultrasound when neither a doctor nor a patient seem to think that it's necessary. This is the budget that's going to authorize the State Board of Elections to enforce those voter suppression rules that or laws that have come out of the legislature this year. This is the budget that's going to fund per pupil education at a level of 10% lower than we did in 2007, and at the same time send money to private academies out of the general fund. Those are not priorities that I think my friend Tommy would expect the Democratic caucus to support, and surprisingly, we don't support it.
Senator Donald McEachin and Senator Tommy Norman are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 if you have a question for either or both state senators. Our first caller is Tavares in Richmond. Welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with a pair of state senators.
Thank you. My question is, I've been reading a lot that this budget that's been introduced cuts a lot of money from education funding. And funds at a level below previous years. I just want to know what the reason for that is exactly.
Bob, I'm happy to address that, and I would say to the caller that for best or worse, I happen to be the chairman of the finance subcommittee that deals with education. I'll start off with a little bit of a partisan tweak, and I'm sure Don will endure me. We talk about cuts to public education that have taken place since the referenced year of 2007 that Don mentioned. I think it's very important to remember that in the years 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2011, that the Democrats had a majority in the Senate of Virginia. I think it's further important to remember in 2010, where cuts were made in an unprecedented level to public education, that bill passed the Senate of Virginia 40-0. Every Democrat and every Republican voted on cutting that. And then in 2011, further cuts were made, which passed the Senate unanimously with every Democrat and every Republican voting to fund public education. But to address specifically, I think there's a little bit of misconception out there right now as it relates to the funding of public education. The governor introduced a budget that put about $434 million in new money in K through 12. I would acknowledge that about $340 of that was to use to pay the teacher's share of the Virginia retirement system. The difference, of course, going into the classroom. But the important thing is that the Senate budget, which my good friends voted against, put another $165 million of new money into K through 12 public education. So while the funding levels may be below that which they were 5 years ago, we are desperately trying to restore them and restore them in a responsible manner.
Donald McEachin?
Well, I appreciate Tommy's answer, but the reality is that we are at below 2007 levels on a per pupil basis. We've got another, since that time, I think our school system's increased by approximately about 30,000 more children. And it's my understanding that our class ratios, our teacher-pupil ratios are going up probably about by a factor of 5 children per class. That's not where we want Virginia to be. And the issue that has gone unanswered so far is while we are doing this, while we are funding at this low level, we are still managing to find money to send to private academies out of the general fund. That to me seems to be incongruent. That to me doesn't seem to be for us to be serious about funding public school education.
You're talking about tax credits?
Absolutely.
In what amount?
I think the dollar amount is $10 million. Yeah, $10 million that will fund that program. And that's obviously money that I believe would be better spent on the public schools.
Thank you, Tavares. Thanks for your call and your question. Our next caller is Doug from Charlottesville. Doug, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Senator Tommy Norman and Senator Donald McEachin.
Yes, thank you. Gentlemen, why did the House or the General Assembly want to set up a new 401k-style retirement for state employees? Won't that take even more money from the VRS-defined pension and make things worse for that? And also, why did the House lower the pension multiplier for employees, make it even make less money when they retire? And does the Senate support this?
Senator Norman, you want to take that first?
Well, I'll try to take it. There are a number of proposals out there about the Virginia retirement system. The reality is that ever since Sarbanes-Oxley was passed, it requires even state governments to carry on their balance sheets rather than off balance sheets unfunded liabilities, and that's where this conversation started. Actuarially, it appears that the Virginia retirement system was about $17 billion underfunded for a variety of reasons. Some of that as a result of the downturn in the stock market, some as a result of not requiring state employees to contribute quite enough, and the state also not funding quite enough. And finally, in 2010, there was a what they referred to as a holiday on a deposit. But that's how we got where we are. Since then, in an effort to try to rectify this actuarial unsoundness, a number of proposals have come up. One was the 401k plan, which is very common in the private sector. I think it's interesting to note that all of corporate America is moving away from the type of retirement program that we currently have in Virginia and are requiring their employees to contribute something towards their retirement. What we have in Virginia is an anomaly in this current day and age. So the idea of a 401k came up, which would be a program whereby the employee would have greater control over determining the type of investments and how they want to invest. I know in my law firm we have a 401k, and I have much more control and discretion over that. As far as the multiplier is concerned, I think that when we do get down to having a discussion about the budget, that clearly the multiplier that this gentleman makes reference to is going to be a subject of discussion. One of the things that's been an issue of concern is why does the actual state of Virginia pay at one level of the multiplier, and why do local governments pay at another level of a multiplier? And there have been proposals to equalize that. I think that's about the best I can do on that.
Donald McEachin?
I'm not going to be able to articulate why the House of Delegates has done certain things. I'm not well versed in that yet. But I think it's important for folks to understand that what the Senate has done, and if I'm not mistaken, and Tommy can correct me, the Senate has done this by a vote of 40 to nothing, is to adopt an approach to VRS that blends two concepts. One is defined benefit, which is the type of retirement program that you're sort of used to being in Virginia, and defined contribution, which is the 401k piece. We have molded those two together. We will not require that of existing employees. We require that of new employees, and I believe that begins in 2014. I believe that it managed correctly. The new employee would make just as much money over time into their retirement system as current employees do. It does require a heightened amount of vigilance, but we have put some things in place to sort of trigger that vigilance automatically to make sure that people are aware of what their monies are doing. It is, in my judgment, it is absolutely necessary if we're going to continue to have a viable VRS.
Thank you, Donald McEachin, and thank you, Doug, for your call and your question. Senator Norman, the Senate today passed an ultrasound bill that was sent over from the House on a 63-36 vote. You made some changes in it. What did the Senate do with that bill today?
Well, the ultrasound legislation has gone through an evolution. Originally, there was a bill introduced in the Senate and also a companion bill in the House of Delegates. Eventually, the Senate bill was stricken. I regret to say that I think many people on the committee and many people on the floor of the Senate did not understand the complications and intricacies of that bill until after it had gotten out. And the reason I use that as a point of reference is the bill that the Senate reported out today, which I will indicate was a bipartisan vote, it included mostly Republicans, but a couple of Democrats who joined in and felt as a matter of conscience they had to vote to report that ultrasound bill. It is a significantly different bill, and I think much of the objectionable language that many women and many legislators found intrusive once they became aware of it has been stricken from that. The only change, I believe, that was made to today, even though there were a lot of amendments that were proposed, was a change that involved accepting out women that had been the victims of rape or an incest situation, that the ultrasound bill would not be required of them. We spent a lot of time today going back and forth with the Democratic and Republican perspectives, but ultimately the bill did pass. I believe it was on a 21-19 vote, as I recall. One Republican voted against the bill, and two Democrats voted in favor of the bill that resulted in a 21-19 passage.
Donald McEachin, you oppose that bill. Is there a significant chance that it's going to the governor's office as the Senate passed it today?
I would think there's a significant chance. I don't know that the House would take off the amendments about rape or incest. But I think what the message I would communicate to your listeners is this. The first bill, as Senator Norman said, folks didn't know what the bill did, including the governor's office, that it would have required a transvaginal ultrasound. The governor then backed off of that, and the House backed off of it. The Senate sponsor struck the bill. But the problem is that we're still practicing medicine. This is the only place in the code, and we went over this time and time and time again on the floor of the Senate today. This is the only place in the code where a diagnostic procedure is mandated. We ought not to practice medicine. We are policymakers. But the practice of medicine is outside of our purview. And for us to come in and to say to a doctor and to a patient that you need this procedure is just wrong. It's bad policy. Not only that, Bob, but the other thing that we did was we tested the other side, that is the Republicans' willingness to figure out how to pay for this procedure. Because it's not a mandatory procedure, because it's not medically necessary, insurance coverage may not be available for it. So we tried to mandate insurance in one of the amendments. That was turned down. Then we said, okay, well, if a woman doesn't have the coverage for it, she doesn't have to do the ultrasound. That was turned down. Then we said, okay, let the Department of Health pay for the ultrasound. That was turned down. So now we're saying to the women of Virginia, not only do you have to have a medically unnecessary procedure, but you've got to pay for it out of your pocket if necessary. I just think that is, again, bad policy. And more importantly, it's not in keeping with the wishes of Virginia. And you have certainly seen the polling data in that regard.
Senator Donald McEachin of Henrico County and Senator Tommy Norman of James City County are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call, 866-611-NEWS, 866-611-6397, if you have a question for the senators. Our next caller is James from Stanton. James, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with the two senators.
I think that you meant to get James, and I think you got me. I'm Paul.
Okay, Paul. You're in Charlottesville, I take it.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I just had a real quick comment, and I hope that this doesn't sound too mean, but the Republican agenda seems to be, let's get people into this world, let's not educate them, let's force them to have medical procedures against their will, and then let's sell them as many guns as we possibly can. I don't think that's the right type of policymaking. I don't think it's the right kind of budget. I would just urge our representatives to fight that kind of nonsense, whether it's in policy or in budget. And I just appreciate the opportunity to come on and voice my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Senator Norman, any comment on Paul's observation?
Well, my observations would be, as I'm still waiting for Paul's question, but he decided to take an opportunity to make a politically charged editorial comment. And with all due respect, coming from Charlottesville and based on the tenor of his comments, I would have to say that he probably is on Don's side of the aisle and not on my side of the aisle. But there are a lot of things that have gone on during the session of the General Assembly that have nothing to do with the social agenda, have nothing to do with guns. And I'm probably not a good one to talk about the one gun a month because I was the one Republican that
voted to keep it on the books.
I did. And I made it very plain that when we did this in 93, that I was one of the, while I was a young freshman senator, that Senator Stolle and I were fairly instrumental in pushing that one gun a month bill through, and I just thought it would be hypocritical for me to reverse that. But there's much going on other than just the social agenda and the Second Amendment agenda. The unfortunate thing, if you're on my side of the aisle, is that the media finds it to have a much higher sex appeal to write about those controversial subjects where there is a ideological divide within the Senate as opposed to some of the less attractive and more boring, mundane legislation dealing with other funding issues. But I get it, and that's just the process.
Well, weren't there 1,000 women who came down to demonstrate their opposition to the transvaginal ultrasound bill last week outside the General Assembly building in a silent protest? I mean, today the governor signed the bill that that did reverse the one gun a month accomplishment that Governor Wilder put on the books back when he was governor of Virginia. Don, any observation on the change in Virginia's policy on that that bill?
Yeah, I think it's regrettable. I hope that we don't return to the days of being the gun-running state, which necessitated the legislation in the first instance. But I was going to raise the issue about the 1,000 people who came to the General Assembly to protest the ultrasound bill. I don't think that was generated by the press. I think that was generated by an earnest desire of people to be heard to the extent that the press made it known what was happening up at the Capitol. I think they were doing their job. I do not believe that there has been, quite frankly, enough coverage on the social issues that have permeated this General Assembly. And, you know, I have to come back to ultrasound and share one more point with your listeners. This is the same Republican caucus that I think almost to a person in the Senate opposed the mandate for health insurance that the Congress passed. And at the same time, they're mandating coverage for health insurance. They're mandating a medical procedure that they're not prepared to help the woman pay for. I don't understand the intellectual consistency in that.
Well, I'll try to help with intellectual consistency on it.
I knew I could count on you.
You knew that you could, Don. On it, the whole situation about the Obama health care is obviously a very divisive issue that ultimately I think Don and I both would agree is going to be decided by the United States Supreme Court. Virginia is trying to hold back on making too large a commitment in that regard until that decision is made. And I think that's a prudent thing to do. But on the ultrasound situation, and I made the comment today, and I generally don't speak on the floor of the Senate about these issues, but I did make the comment today. First of all, there are many insurance companies that are covering the ultrasound, and that would be the ultrasound, what we call jelly on the belly situation, as opposed to the one that was stricken, which was certainly more intrusive. But many of the insurance carriers are paying for that today. And the amendments that were being offered today was some political gamesmanship. And I don't say that disrespectfully, because we engage in that a lot to try and to tee up the issues. And one of the way that they that we tee up issues on the floor of the Senate is to offer amendments. There was no expectation in the mind of the Democrats that any of those amendments were going to be approved, but it gave them a forum to discuss them. By the same token, the Republicans were prepared to respond, realizing what the outcome was, but to try to advocate their respective position. And the whole business about trying to mandate insurance coverage on it would have been a deviation from a protocol that we have followed for the 21 years that I've been in the Senate, where we don't mandate benefits on the floor. We refer it to a mandate benefit commission.
Senator Tommy Normand of James City County, the Republican majority leader in the Virginia Senate, and Senator Donald McEachin of Henrico County, the caucus chair for the Democrats in the Senate, are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call if you have a question for either or both senators, 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. Let's go back to our callers. Our next caller is Keith from Blacksburg. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question for Senator Norman. I hear from the Republican Party all the time about no government. Let's get the government out of my bedroom, get it out of my business. Let things go where they may. And I can think of nothing more hypocritical than the ultrasound bill that's been mandated because of government or because of Republican pressure and whatever. And I just think it's extremely hypocritical. Your comments, please.
I respect your opinion from Blacksburg. I don't accept your premise that it is hypocritical. I think it's very important to appreciate in a legislative process where you have a Democratic Party and a Republican Party that each of those parties and those legislators have core constituency groups that are relied upon. I think, generally speaking, you find that my Democratic friends have a closer affiliation with organized labor than Republicans. I think that you find Republicans have a closer relationship with those that are pro-life, ranging from moderate to ardently pro-life. And the Republicans, many of who ran through very demanding races this past November, were running on some pro-life amendments, and there were discussions about ultrasound and certainly more intrusive procedures that we have been debated. And so I think that there is a genuine commitment on the part of some of the Republican senators and the Republican members of the House that they are following campaign representations and promises that they made. And I'm sorry that you find it hypocritical. I'm respectful of your opinion. I just do not find it such.
Donald, 30 seconds before we break at the bottom of the hour. Do you want to say anything to respond to Keith's call?
Well, I certainly understand his perspective. I'm not going to call my friend a hypocrite, but what I will say is this. I think there's an important point to be made back to this insurance issue. Senator Norman has tried to suggest that, well, maybe I'm going to have to come back and talk about that after the break.
I think we do have to take a break right now. Senator Donald McEachin and Senator Tommy Norman are my guests on Assembly Conversations. We'll be back after this short break.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Assembly Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.